Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the November 6, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I would point out that emergency exits are to my right at the back of the room and to my left in the front of the room. If there should be a fire, please don't use the elevator. Also would ask anybody with electronic devices, cell phones, et cetera, to please silence them for the meeting. Please stand with me and recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll, please?
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Mic's not working.
Trouble with the audio. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused.
Mike is out again.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have a quorum. First order of business tonight is a public hearing. I'll read the notice. The Tompkins County Legislature will hold a public hearing at 5:30 p.m. in the legislature chambers concerning proposed Local Law F of 2014, repeal of Local Law Number 3 of 2014, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2015. Is there anyone who would like to be heard about this proposed local law repealing the previous local law? I guess not. Okay, then we'll close the public hearing and move forward. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I have a proclamation tonight. Is there someone?
Is Lisa Holmes here?
This is on the home care month. Is there someone here to receive this for the group? Let me just read a shortened version of it. Proclamation. Whereas home care services provide high quality and compassionate health care services to those in need, especially at times of community and personal health care crisis, and whereas home care is the most preferred method of health care delivery among disabled, elderly, and chronically ill individuals eager to live independently in their own homes as long as they possibly can, and whereas home care services allows families to stay together and provide for the greater health, dignity, and comfort of our community. And whereas home care in the United States is a growing alternative to hospitalization or other institution-based forms of health care for acute and chronic illnesses, providing care to millions of Americans each year. And whereas entities in Tompkins County provide these vital services, and they are lifelong, Tompkins County Office of the Aging, Ithaca College Gerontology Institute, Longview Visiting Nurse Service, Hospicare, Tompkins County Health Department, Finger Lakes Independent Center, Francisca Racker Center, Tompkins County Department of Social Services, Caregivers, Comfort Keepers, Class and Home Health Associates, Staff Kings, Red Moon, Brookdale Senior Living, and Family and Children's Respite Program. Now, therefore, I, Michael Lane, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do proclaim November 2014 as Home Care Month in Tompkins County and encourage the support and participation of all citizens in learning more about the home care and hospice concepts of care for the elderly, disabled, and infirm. May we have an applause? Forward this to the agencies that are involved, and we appreciate the work that they have done in bringing forth this important service. And as all of us age, it's going to become more and more important that we have more health care at home. I don't believe we have any executive session tonight. Is that true, Dave? Or Dave? Joe? Where's Dave? Dave was a photographer.
No executive
session. And I don't see Jonathan, so I'm assuming we're not going to do that. Then let's move to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the public's opportunity to speak to us on any subject for up to 3 minutes. We ask anybody who would like to speak to please sign one of these blue cards. I have a number of them. And to abide by our requirements. And I will read them. When you sign the blue card, you agree. One, I agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. We have a screen to my left, which will show the time remaining for each speaker. I have a number of speakers. And at the end of the 3 minutes, there will be an audible signal, like a telephone ring. And please conclude at that point if you haven't already. Mr. Metz from Danby. Is that Guillermo?
Yes, sir.
Welcome. And also, please indicate your municipality when you speak up. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Guillermo Metz from Danby. So thank you for this opportunity. I work on energy issues for Cornell Cooperative Extension here in Tompkins County, and I just want to give my full personal and professional support to the work of the Tompkins County Planning Department and of this Tompkins County Legislature around energy policy. The county's made a commitment to reducing greenhouse gas emissions in its operations and to pursue policies that support energy efficiency measures and the transition from fossil fuels. And I understand that there is some discussion about the a pipeline that's going in the General Dryden area that to carry additional natural gas to businesses and additional residences in that area. And there's a perceived conflict between this type of policy, the energy policy that the county has put forth already, and economic growth. But in today's world, they're absolutely not mutually exclusive. Not only do renewables create far more jobs than fossil fuels on a per energy unit basis, but they provide far more money to the local economy, and it's possible to supply all of our energy needs with renewables economically. This isn't how most developers and business people are used to thinking about energy, but it is today's energy picture. And this legislature can support an easement for massive infrastructure that goes directly against the county's stated goals and that will be in place for decades, or it can stand behind its commitment and stand strong in its support of a needed transition to a clean energy economy. I've spent the past few years working on alternative energy issues and can tell you that things are very different today than they were just a few years ago, with the technology and certainly with the costs. I want to mention a concept I recently heard that while we don't know exactly what fossil fuel prices are and the availability are going to look like in the future, we do know their harmful effects on both the community and global scale, and that the trend has been that they become more expensive over time. Renewable energy is technology-based. Over time, technology only becomes better and cheaper. And producing our own power locally is more secure than relying on power that comes from afar. So I urge you to not be bullied by a fear of what that transition may look like, or by people who have a vested interest in expanding fossil fuel use. There are many options available for clean, secure economic development that will help create a strong, resilient, thriving community. And there are many, many examples of businesses thriving through their use of renewables in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Sue Stein. And after that, I have Hugh Edwards.
Hello. Is this working? My name is Sue Stein. I live at 983 Western Dryden Road, so I'm a member of the Town of Dryden and the Town of Lansing both. I am here tonight to tell you what it is like to be a property owner on West Dryden Road in the face of the proposed pipeline to deliver gas to new development in Lansing. I would like to make you aware of how NYSEC has been acting in bad faith in this project, asking homeowners to sign an unfair easement obscured by legal language and completely lacking any property owner protections. I want to give you a few examples. NYSEC has told us, and probably they've told you also the same, that they are putting in the gas line down the edge of the road in the shoulder with minimal intrusion onto our properties. However, it is my understanding that the county hasn't given NYSEC permission to use the shoulder of the road. What's even more disturbing about this is that farther down in this easement is legal language that I did not understand until it was explained to me by a lawyer, language that gives NYSEC the right to put the pipeline anywhere on our property and to put up any structure they wish to erect. They can also remove anything from my property, including my, quote, structures, which I believe includes my house and my barn. Let me read to you from directly from the lease. Quote, together with ingress and egress over the easement and right-of-way and other lands of the grantors, which means my entire property, for all of the above purposes and the right now and from time to time, which means forever, to trim, cut, burn, treat, and or remove by manual, mechanical, and chemical means trees, roots, brush, structures, my house and barn, other obstructions within said easement and right-of-way. That sentence in one fell and, in my opinion, dishonest swoop gives NYSEG complete rights to the use of our entire property from now and forever, without limits. This is a dangerous agreement. NYSEG has told us, as they have probably also told you and other representatives, that this is a distribution line with a maximum pressure of 124 PSI. A pressure of 125 PSI, by the way, is a high-pressure line, so we're just one PSI below that. However, in the easement, there is no mention of the size of the pipe, not the size, no mention of the PSI, and in the easement, it does not say distribution line. It says, I quote, underground transmission. Can I repeat that? Underground transmission and or distribution line. Let me repeat that one more time. There is nothing in this easement to limit the size, pressure, or type of pipeline this is, and this easement gives NYSEG the right to put such a pipeline anywhere on my property now or in the future. Why didn't NYSEG give homeowners a fair easement to sign? In addition to stealing our property rights, this easement has absolutely no protections for homeowners. It's a single page. A fair easement is at least 12 to 16 pages long. Each individual homeowner, if they have been lucky enough to understand the egregious nature of this easement, should have to pay a lawyer to be protected. Does that sound right to you? I hope you understand the critical nature of our situation. I don't want to sign an easement that supports increased fossil fuel use, and I am almost done. But NYSEG can use eminent domain that will take my property against my will and also take away my right to negotiate a fair easement to protect my property and my family. Why am I and my neighbors being forced to take on all this risk and liability? What happens in the future if a lot of people sign this open-ended easement? Please, help us out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Where do I leave? Where do I leave?
You could leave them with the clerk here. You could pass them up to one of the legislators. Will pass them up if you want. Hugh Edwards, please. Then Genevieve DeClerc.
Hi, my name is Hugh Edwards, and pardon me. I'm a property owner, and I live on the south side of West Dryden Road in Freeville, town of Dryden, where NYSEG is planning to install this 10-inch gas delivery pipeline. So NYSEG has presented us with an easement contract, which I have a copy of here for you, that appears to be unrestricted in terms of the placement of the proposed pipeline inside the boundary of our property. And also, there's no mention in the easement of the pressure of this pipeline or any other technical specifications. So it makes it impossible for me to evaluate the actual impact on our property. So last week, two NYSEG reps came to our house to encourage us to sign this easement. But during our discussion, several things stood out to me. So when I mentioned to one of the representatives of NYSEG that I'd like to have an attorney review the easement, he told me, oh, no. I wouldn't advise that you talk to an attorney about this. Just write your concerns on the easement and sign it. So then another item here, the NYSEG rep then went on to tell me in very specific terms that the pipeline would be installed directly along the south shoulder of West Dryden Road and its installation would have no effect on our fencing, trees, well water, anything at all. It was going to go directly along the shoulder. But in examining the easement document, as I mentioned earlier, it appears that the easement would allow NYSEG to install pipeline anywhere on the property and even remove buildings if they needed to do that. So that's in direct conflict with the story that this NYSEG rep was telling me as he was trying to convince us to sign. So when we asked the representative for construction plan or maps, some kind of technical documentation, they could produce none of these things and were pretty much dismissive of that request. The NYSEG rep also indicated that if we did not cooperate and sign the easement, that they would be able to obtain access to the property, in his words, by other means. So I wonder what that means. Could that mean like eminent domain, possibly? That would not be good. So I'm very concerned with the tactics that were being used here against us to sign this document. And I really feel that I feel as though I'm in NYSEG's crosshairs. And as a citizen and taxpayer, I don't think I should be subjected to the deception and coercion that I felt during our interaction. So my hope is that the county legislature, can look into this pipeline issue, this whole easement thing that NYSEG is proposing. Sorry, I've lost my place in my reading. So I hope you can look into the pipeline easement matter and how NYSEG is conducting its quest to gain access to my property and to all the other properties on this stretch of West Dryden Road, 8 miles long. Thank you.
Thank you. Genevieve DeClercq. Then Joe Wilson.
Hi, I'm Genevieve DeClercq. I live on West Dryden Road in the town of Dryden as well. I'm here to state my deep concerns about the proposed pipeline for West Dryden Road. I'm a resident who lives on the road in the town of Dryden and was sent an easement document to sign by NYSEG. I'd like to express how alone and unprotected I have felt in all of this. I feel like I'm being cornered by NYSEG with no help from the town and county in which I pay taxes. The easement contract that NYSEG is presenting to me is extremely open-ended and is a far cry from a fair contract. There's no language about liability and who would be responsible for damages caused by subcontractors during and after the construction phase, and it's extremely vague about the actual parameters of the construction plan and how it would impinge on our land. It seems to indicate that it could take the right-of-way of any part of our property, not just the 15-foot strip along the front of our property, and offers an insulting $1 compensation for the whole deal. There are very serious issues with the easement contract NYSEG is presenting to the residents of West Dryden Road. I actually have no interest in natural gas for my home, so even if it were possible, I would not choose to connect to the pipeline. I heat my home with a wood stove and a furnace that runs on vegetable oil, and I plan on participating in solarized Tompkins next year. It's extremely short-sighted and unfair to be putting these risks on the residents of West Dryden Road so that a small group of developers in Lansing can benefit, all the while NYSEG ratepayers are footing the bill for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe Wilson, then Irene Weiser.
I'm Joe Wilson. I'm here to express my concerns about the West Dryden Pipeline Gas Line initiative as well. There are a couple of things that I'll give particulars about, but in my pre-principal of IHS background is 18 years of practicing law in California, some of which was in civil law in this kind of area, and I also served the state of Delaware as the director of planning and agency coordination. So to some level I know of whereof I now speak. There are contradictions between what NYSEG and its supporters are saying about the gas line when you look at the easement. Some of them have been pointed out, and I will try and be brief about them. Number one, contrary to NYSEG's claim, it intends to construct one gas distribution line. There is no limit to the number of lines that can be installed within the easement as it now stands. contrary to NYSEG's claim that it intends to put a limit, a low limit, on the pressure in the line, there are no limits in the easement. And it is customary, if you're going to have a low-pressure line, to put the limit of the pressure that you're going to put the gas under into the easement. Three, there's no limit in the easement with regard to the access to the property for construction or afterwards. As has been suggested already, the easement says that NYSEG can come on any time for any purpose that they deem related to the pipeline. The pipeline that NYSEG displayed in its one public meeting has a much greater capacity for gas than is needed for local residents and local businesses. As your own planning department has said, the pipe, quote, has the power to expand the use of natural gas throughout the urbanized area of the county and beyond well into the future. Apparently, number five, apparently NYSEG told the Chamber of Commerce it will provide gas to residents at low or no cost. There's nothing remotely related to that provision in the easement. Finally, two other things. The West Dryden Pipeline Initiative can be regarded as part of Dominion's New Markets Initiative, a Northeast region initiative that involves at least 200 miles of gas pipeline and multiple compressor stations. The purpose of the initiative is to raise gas prices by moving gas from the Marcellus shale fields below us to export facilities in Canada. That will raise the price of gas to world levels. That, in turn, is about five times the current price of domestic gas. To marry residents, local businesses, and the rest of the county to natural gas in the face of the anticipated price raises is a foolish effort and should not be part of what the legislature supports. Thank you.
Thank you. Irene? Then Linda Parks.
Thanks. Hi. I'm Irene Weiser, a council member in the town of Caroline. And I'm here also to speak about, in some ways, about the pipeline. But I brought some displays with me, some beautiful posters, and they are of the very beautiful and wonderful document that this legislature passed back in 2008, supporting a terrific vision. And that vision was for considering clean energy usage and greenhouse gas emissions when making decisions about local laws and regulations for future development, transportation projects, and to really take into account the greenhouse gas consequences of the development that happens in this county. I'm very heartened, actually. I was attending the Economic Development Committee earlier this week and very heartened by the discussion there and the recognition that we do need to bring together economic development and climate protection and find ways to move forward with both. And I compliment Mr. Metz for his comments in letting us know that it actually can be done very well right now. But I also want to bring forward to you some information from a conversation I had with some attorneys at the Public Service Commission today, which had me very distressed. I was calling to get some more information about the pipeline, and I learned from them that this pipeline, first of all, doesn't come under any regulations by them because it's small. If the size were 125 PSI or above, they would have authority to regulate it and would go through an Article 7 proceeding. But right now they have no authority. The size of this pipeline, a 10-inch diameter steel pipeline, their engineers estimate that the number of homes that this would provide service to is between 30 and 45,000 homes. 30 and 45,000 homes. This pipeline is larger than powering all the homes in the county of our current existing homes. So this is an astonishing bit of information, further compounded by learning that NYSEG has eminent domain rights, as you've heard some property owners talk about. Their property could be taken over. And what this amounts to is a corporation trespassing on this county's proclaimed vision and direction for how to move forward to protect ourselves and our commitment to reducing greenhouse gases. And we can't do that if a corporation with eminent domain is able to trespass through our county to install something of this size and nature. So I don't know what the answers are, but I urge you to look for what we can do to keep this county's vision for how it wants to move forward alive and not have to cede to the corporate view. Thanks.
Thank you, Irene. Linda Parks, then Gay Nicholson.
Hi, I'm Linda Parks. I live in the town of Dryden on West Dryden Road. I've lived there for 27 years. My concerns for the environment have led me to make energy efficient improvements to my home. I'm an accountant, and I always do evaluate the energy costs of my home. A major learning experience occurred as a result of an addition. This addition was not built to the best possible energy efficiency level at the time, which has resulted in, of course, higher costs now. So I've learned it pays to do my research and to do a project right the first time. I am encouraged by the new technologies that allow us all to markedly reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. Through the Tompkins Solar Southeast program, I have two solar systems which provide virtually all the electricity I need. Amortizing the cost of these systems brings my electrical costs to a very nominal level. I will personally continue to make energy-efficient improvements to my home. I am now faced with the possibility of a gas pipeline coming through my property. Installation of this pipeline is counter to the direction we should all be going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. If installed, it will have a significant adverse impact on property and quality of life for all of us who live and own property in this area. As you've already heard, while NYSEG verbally states this is to be a transmission line, the easement as provided allows both a transmission line and a distribution line, unlimited number of lines. The financial impact on property values is real and significant. The stated speed limit on West Dryden Road is 55 miles an hour, which means we live with everyday traffic at 70 miles per hour and higher. Many of us have notable trees which buffer our homes from the downsides of this traffic. As we know, gas pipelines and tree routes are not compatible. So this pipeline could certainly mean a wide swath of our property that would be forever treeless. I, like several of my neighbors, have a shallow well that is close to the road. I am certainly concerned about the impact on our wells both during the construction and maintenance of such a pipeline. Damage and loss to trees, wells, property, and as you've heard, structures, as the proposed easement is written, are to be borne by the property owner. This could obviously be very costly to many of us. I do wonder if all the possible paths for county energy consumption have been adequately explored. This proposed pipeline should not proceed until all the alternatives have been really analyzed, looking at both financial and environmental costs. My experience tells me that energy-efficient alternatives are economically feasible. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Gay Nicholson, then Mary Alice Kobler.
Hello, I'm Gay Nicholson from the town of Lansing. It seems that our county has really reached an important juncture in balancing our goals for the future, and the issue of the Dryden gas pipeline is perhaps a surprising focal point for us for the conversation we need to have about how to guide ourselves. But it's clearly that its impact is larger than what we may have thought when we first heard about it. And those of us working on climate and clean energy want to affirm that we share these values regarding development in Tompkins County. We want to see access to housing that is affordable over the long haul, opportunities for meaningful work, thriving and connected communities, resilience and self-reliance, and responsible and coordinated development that examines how costs and benefits are distributed over time and in our community. We understand that advocates for the pipeline are hoping to see a large addition of residential housing and business development out in Northeast Lansing because they want to expand the tax base in Lansing and satisfy the energy needs of the businesses and the residents. But we believe that there are problems with the assumptions they're making about using natural gas to meet those energy needs. Advocates for the pipeline assert that methane is cheap, methane has lower environmental costs, affordable alternatives are just not available, and that residents along the pipeline corridor will benefit. We're in the process of examining those assumptions in greater detail, but we suspect that they are false assumptions to be making. We suspect that methane prices will inevitably rise due to the build-out of infrastructure to grow demand, the export of methane to global markets where the price is much higher, and the declining cost-effectiveness of extracting shale gas in the remaining fields. Over time, the price will go up from these factors. Methane also has equally bad impacts on environment and climate as the propane and fuel oil that are seen as the alternatives. It's 80 times more potent as a greenhouse gas, and leakage rates during extraction and transport are twice as bad as thought. And we all know that fracked gas comes with a significant environmental risk to our air and water and the people living near its wells, pipelines, storage depots, and compressor stations. When all the costs are added up, methane is more expensive to society than the alternatives, like renewably sourced electricity, heat pumps, efficiency measures, demand management, and biomass. These alternatives are available and affordable if we were to really look at the full cost accounting of all of the options. And as you've heard tonight, the pipeline easement is quite unfair to the landowners, and it increases their risk and liability. And hookups to the and conversion to methane are probably more expensive than the alternatives. We would like to come back next month or sometime in the near future with the results of our inquiry and our energy modeling that we're doing right now on the alternatives and discuss this further with the legislature and with other parts of our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Gay. Mary Alice Kobler, please.
Elizabeth
Kiyokoski.
I'm here to thank the legislature for your, on behalf of our community, present and future. And I thank you for your integrity, your dedication, and your willingness to face the real issues that are before us. And I urge you to hold steady and represent your community as you have been doing. Our comprehensive plan has been gone over by many great people, and we hold you to it, and we want you. We'll be at your back. We really thank you for your hard work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Elizabeth Kiyokoski, please. Then Paul Mazzarella.
Hello. My name is Elizabeth Kiyokoski, and I'm from Danby. And I'm here to contribute comments on the pipeline, too, just like people before me. I think to allow the use, the increase in use, to expand the use of natural gas is to admit defeat and a failure of the imagination, creativity, and especially when the policies that you have put together, which I think are marvelous, that other people have brought up, to take advantage of the renewable energy sources whenever possible. So I would prefer to see the county becoming as energy efficient as possible and exploring new ways of creating energy, like distributed power, microgrids, and using a variety of alternative energy methods in ways that synergize with each other. My particular experiences with biomass, I started several organizations around biomass, and I've researched its use in New York and New England area. And in this area, I've surveyed six commercial biomass boilers, one at SUNY Binghamton, one at Lockheed Martin, one at Arnott Ogden Medical Center, the Cuga Nature Center, and Danby Highway Barns. The most impressive, in my opinion, was the Lockheed Martin in Owego. They use it as an environmental showcase. What they did that was different from all the other people was to have a team of maintenance people, environmentalists, and engineers work out the concept and layout several months before the installation. I spoke to Dan Giddings, the facility operations analyst, and Mike McGill, who is the power plant engineer there. I have some information on their system. It's also a copy is up front in the people at the desk. They have two 600 horsepower, 300 PSI Wellens USA wood-fired boilers. They use moving step grate combustion, which is one of the best technologies. They do cogeneration with a 750 kilowatt turbine electric generator from steam. It's a 20 million BTU unit. The date it was installed was September 2008. They use wood chips, green 30 to 45% moisture hardwood. The delivery size is a 26-28 ton truckload, and the length of time one delivery lasts on coldest days is a half day. They have a storage bin that is 15 truckloads, or approximately. If anybody wants further information, I can give contact names and addresses, phone numbers for the people at Lockheed Martin. And I want to just say at the end that combined heat and power is one of the most efficient uses of energy.
Thank you. And if you want to submit something, you can always do that either now or after the meeting.
I submit something.
You said that people wanted names,
yes,
and addresses.
Right in front there.
Okay, thank you. Paul Mazzarella, then Brian Eden.
Good evening. My name is Paul Mazzarella. I live at 39 Woodcrest Avenue in the city of Ithaca, and I'm also executive director of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services. I'm here tonight to comment on the draft comprehensive plan that Tompkins County has prepared. And just to give you a little bit of information about myself, I am a planner by professional training. I've read a lot of comprehensive plans. I've written comprehensive plans. And I'm extremely impressed with the plan that your planning department has put together. One thing in particular stands out to me, and that is that there's an entire chapter on climate change and energy use. This is not the kind of thing that you usually see in a comprehensive plan, but I think it's critically important, and I commend you for taking this topic and including it as a matter of public policy for our county. Some of the comments that I've heard from people about this plan are that there are parts of it that are internally inconsistent and possibly not achievable, namely that the plan envisions development happening in Tompkins County and, in fact, wants to see development, for example, affordable housing, and yet you also have a goal of having a climate-neutral energy system here. So how can we do both of those things? And many people are saying it's not possible. I think it is, and I think there are numerous examples already underway in Tompkins County that prove that we can both reduce energy use and protect the climate and achieve some of our development goals. One of those is a project that Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services just recently completed, and it's only a few blocks from here. It's the Breckenridge Place Apartments. This is a 50-unit apartment building, which has achieved certification as an Energy Star and a LEED Platinum building. And if you're not familiar with those programs, they are certifications that show that it has achieved a really high level of both energy efficiency and environmental conscious design. This building uses a air-to-air heat exchange system to provide both the heating and the cooling for the building. It's an all-electric system. It is not currently off the grid, but it can be. And that's one of the wonderful things about the way we can plan and grow our buildings here. So I can easily envision Breckenridge Place using entirely renewable energy and not contributing to climate change. I encourage you to continue to promote projects like this, and you have many partners in Tompkins County, including INHS, that want to support that. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Brian Eden. Then Jonathan Comstock.
Brian Eden, the Village of Cayuga Heights. Last Sunday, the International Panel on Climate Change issued the fifth assessment report. It was authored by 800 scientists who received 136,000 review comments prior to issuing the final document. The report is the assessment of the scientific, technical, and socioeconomic impacts of climate change. Their conclusion is that climate change is set to impose severe, widespread, and irreversible impacts on the Earth. On Monday, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon stated that science has spoken. There is no ambiguity in the message. Leaders must act. Time is not on our side. Quick, decisive action would build a better and more sustainable future, while inaction will be costly. Change resistance is the tendency for a system to continue its behavior despite the evidence that the outcome may be highly negative. Entrenched special interests will always vigorously oppose change. As you may recall, the U.S. Senate did not ratify the Kyoto Protocol. A recent Ipsos poll, Global Trends 2014, surveyed citizens of 20 nations on the question, the climate change we are currently seeing is largely the result of human activity. 54% of Americans responded yes, which ranked us last and was 10 points less than the next lowest nation. We need to decouple local economic vitality from the potential environmental degradation that may be regarded as an inevitable outcome of such development. In the community that should drive the identification and adoption of more sustainable development goals. As chair of the EMC's Energy Committee, I've been striving to support the county's greenhouse gas emission reduction goals. I would assess our goals as ranking somewhere between far less than that is required by circumstances, but slightly more than symbolic. Yet we have accomplished much more than other municipalities. Planning staff and many community volunteers have dedicated so much effort to the realization of our 80 by 2050 goals. We should be proud of their achievements. Although not fully familiar with our proposals to reduce the county's reliance on fossil fuels, some organizations have adopted strong policy positions in opposition that may reduce opportunities to achieve community consensus on how best to proceed. A community technical advisory committee, relying on some of our many highly qualified residents, has been formed to study and model a variety of options to meet commercial and residential energy needs without resort to fossil fuels. Hopefully, there will be an opportunity to present our findings to the legislature, other interested community organizations, and local residents. I would request that the legislature reserve judgment on our proposals until we are able to provide you with this information. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I call the next speaker, I want to say I have three blue cards left. If there's anyone else who wants to speak tonight, please fill out a blue card and send it up to us. Jonathan Comstock, then Thomas Shelley.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Comstock. I'm here to make some comments as the chair of the board of directors of Solar Tompkins. Solar Tompkins is a volunteer-led nonprofit advancing the transition to renewable energy here in Tompkins County. And first of all, I want to thank the legislature for its support, for agreeing to act as our fiscal sponsor as we raised funds from granting agencies, and for taking many direct actions to support the development of renewable energy in Tompkins County. I also want to give special thanks to Ed Marks and Katie Borghella and everyone at the County Planning Office for their proactive and highly constructive participation in many of our planning processes. Solar Tompkins is fully succeeding in its ambitious goal of doubling the photovoltaic capacity of residential housing stock in this county in a single year. At the beginning of October, the existing cumulative residential PV capacity in Tompkins County was 2.2 megawatts. Over the course of the past summer, our educational programs have reached thousands of Tompkins County residents and resulted in 355 households that have chosen to go solar with PV installations in their homes. This will add 2.6 megawatts of total residential capacity in one year. The numbers are impressive for showing that rapid transitions are possible, and more importantly, that our communities want this conversion to happen. And people all over the county are taking individual action to make it so. The biggest barriers to this transition throughout the world are political, not technical. And among other things, our program shows that Tompkins County has the will to proceed and will do so if supported by its local leaders. And this is not being done at economic cost, but rather at economic gain and benefit. The systems contracted through our program this year, just this one bite, one program, one year, will produce power worth about $300,000 per year at current energy prices, and will do so for at least the 25 years that they're actually warranted, and many systems go on for 10 or 15 years beyond that. It takes about 6 to 10 years for these systems to pay for themselves with those energy cost savings. And after that, it's just free energy. It's an enrichment of the community through its distributed infrastructure. It's money that will stay in the community and can be spent in a variety of other ways rather than exporting it to distant power suppliers. In addition, in response to it stabilizes the community from economic growth, too. It protects it from price shocks because this is stable, reliable, known sources of energy. In addition, our program alone, the PV installers participating in it this year, created 25 and a half full-time, permanent, living wage jobs. This transition to renewable energy is a long list of winning features, good for homeowners, it's good for business, and enhancing local employment. So I guess I should jump to the chase. So I just wanted to follow up. You know, the IPCC did come out with this report. They are a very conservative group. I hope you realize that. Not conservative politically, conservative in terms of their interpretation of the science. What comes out in that report is what everybody has been able to agree upon. The radical, you know, cutting-edge projections are really downplayed in that report. And yet, it's extremely sobering. Tompkins County, with economic benefits, has a chance to show what can be done if the people and the governments are willing to unite and make them happen. And I thank you for your efforts to date. I hope you will not lose track of the path that we're on and will double down in your commitment to making this happen in a renewable manner. Thank you.
Thomas Shelley, please. Then Deborah Chipola-Dennis.
Good evening. I'm Tom Shelley. I live across the street. I've been there for 36 years, so I'm an old-timer here. I would like to put forth what the paper that Brian and our previous speaker just mentioned. This is actually something I'd like to give you to pass out. Hopefully you will read it. It's a New York Times review of the 175-page-long document that was recently published by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It was published actually November 2nd, so this is a very recent document. The 175-page document isn't very readable to the average layperson, but all the information is there. One quick quote from the document itself is, "Continued emission of greenhouse gases will cause further warming and long-lasting changes in all components of the climate system, increasing the likelihood of severe, pervasive, irreversible impacts for people and ecosystems." So in other words, to put it very bluntly and simply, all the development we're doing now in Tompkins County isn't going to do our children and our grandchildren much good if they're all dead, which is what will happen. I hope you take a peek at this. The second thing I'd like to bring forward, and I think this is on a much more positive note, is a paper by several different people. Mark Jacobson, who is at Stanford, Robert Haworth, who is at Cornell, and many other people, including Tony Ingraffia, who is also at Cornell. It's published in the prestigious journal Energy Policy. It's entitled Examining the Feasibility of Converting New York State's All-Purpose Energy Infrastructure to One Using Wind, Water, and Sunlight. And it's a new paper. It's published in 2013. Well, new for scientific papers, anyway. The highlights of this paper are New York State's all-purpose energy can be derived from wind, water, and sunlight. The conversion reduces New York's end-use power demand by 3%. The plan creates more jobs than lost, since most energy will come from in the state. The plan creates long-term energy policy stability, since fuel costs will be zero, meaning sun, water, wind. The plan decreases air pollution deaths by somewhere to 4,000 lives per year. So we have a path ahead of us. This can all be done, according to this paper, between now and 2030, with given capital resources, and manpower that we have right now. So I urge you all to take a look through this. This is a very readable paper. It's not heavy scientific stuff like the 175-page report is, and I hope you'll have a chance to review it. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Deborah Cipolla-Dennis, please.
Hi. Thanks for letting me speak tonight. My name is Deborah Cipolla-Dennis. I'm from West Dryden Road in the town of Dryden. And I have six points. I'll try to make them quick. First of all, I work at Cornell University. Cornell just issued its new overriding principle for us to all follow, the faculty, staff, and students. And I just want to read that to you. It's about sustainability. Sustainability is meeting the needs of today without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And we've been instructed to consider this in all of our decisions and all of our daily work. So Cornell is making this a priority, as well as others across the county and the nation. And I just wanted to also point out this principle, which is in the comprehensive plan, which is to encourage all new development and renovations to be energy efficient and to take advantage of renewable energy sources whenever possible. This is about sustainability, and you guys knew that in 2008. You knew that was going to be important. It's now 2014. It's even more important than it was then, and we need to start doing this. We need to start putting policies forward and encouraging and actually requiring developers to do better and to build more energy-efficient homes and to think about climate change when they're building. And so I ask you to do that. I live on West Dryden Road, and I live, fortunately, on the north side, so I have not been faced with this very unfair easement yet, although they said that they would crisscross the road if they had to, so I may see one an easement yet. The West Dryden pipeline is not consistent with this. It is actually directly opposite of this principle, so I hope that you'll consider that when you're thinking about that pipeline going in. They state it's a reinforcement pipeline to support current customers. That is wholeheartedly not true. There is no way the size of that pipeline could be for existing customers. It is for new development. And if it is for new development, it is supposed to be paid for by the developers, not by the ratepayers. But they are trying to hide it as a reinforcement project. Ed Marks, I thank you for your courage. I thank you for standing up for this and understanding this and working towards it. So thank you very much for that. There are people in this community that can help to understand energy efficiency and what is possible and the new technologies. Please engage with them and work with them, people like Guillermo Metz, people at Tatum Engineering, Snug Planet, other places in the county. I also wanted to thank you in my last 2 seconds for passing the resolution opposing the expansion of the compressed natural gas at Seneca Lake. Really appreciate that. I am one of the Seneca Lake defenders, and we are blockading that facility actively. 25 people have already been arrested, and we are not going to stop until it stops. Thank you.
Thank you. We would next ask if there's a municipal official who wants to speak to us tonight about their municipality. I don't see one, unless Irene has wants to do that. All right. Then I'll turn to privilege of the floor for legislators. Who'd like to speak? Can I start? I'd like to say something that I've said before, and that is, for some reason, the people who sit around this table tend to be interested in politics. And from time to time, we do things like run for office and run for other offices. And sometimes we win and sometimes we lose. But the very fact that we stand up for the people of Tompkins County and the districts that we're interested in, I think speaks highly of us. We had an election yesterday, and one of our own competed remarkably for a congressional seat, Martha Robertson. And I think we can be proud of that and the fact that, you know, Republicans or Democrats, you know, whether you agree with her or did disagree with her, the fact that she did this work was commendable. What a campaign she ran. And, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Martha Robertson. Thank you, Martha. Others who would like to speak? Brian Robinson.
Could say something, but I too like politics, believe it or not, but I'm here to announce that I am getting out of politics. I am resigning my position on the legislature effective the end of the month. I have been asked and have accepted the position of undersheriff for the county by Sheriff Lansing, and that is what I will do. Let me start with the legislature. I have friends, acquaintances that say to me, "I can't believe that. How can you do that? How can you be on that legislature?" And they probably don't believe me, but, you know, I tell them I enjoy it. I think it's very meaningful. You know, I'm proud that people in my district felt that I could do this work. I take it very seriously. I care about the attendance. I care about the issues. I care about the men and women in this room. I really like it. I like the fact that for the most part, we deal with things on a nonpartisan basis. Truly what we all feel is in the best interests of the residents. Not sure you can say that about every level of government all the time, but I think we do it here. As far as the sheriff's office, it's a challenge. I view it as a challenge. I was honored to be asked to do that. I do have some qualifications that may assist along the way. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to working with the staff up there. They have a very professional, very dedicated staff all the way around. The law enforcement, corrections, the civilian folks that are there. So I'm really looking forward to it. I guess I don't have a whole lot more to say. I'm not leaving right away. I'll be here till the end of the month, and the plan is to begin that work at the beginning of December. And again, I'm looking forward to it. It's kind of a sad moment for me, but also really something I'm looking forward to as well. So,
thank you, Brian.
So thank you.
We're gonna miss you here. You've been a very professional legislator. You've taken on some hard issues as chair of the Public Safety Committee. We're glad you're not going too far away. You're still going to be here for the people of Tompkins County.
I may run into some of you from time to time again along the way.
Yes. Carol Chalk.
Hopefully not in the squad car.
Carol?
You're calling on me, yes. And you'll treat us well, right, when you run into us on the front lines there?
Like I always do.
Okay. Congratulations on your new job. I wanted to say a word about a couple of things. One is you know, nobody showed up from any of the home care agencies to accept the proclamation, but I do want to also champion from personal experience the home care workers I mean, you all know that, that I had occasion to need that intensively 2 years ago, and I am still having a few hours a week of assistance, and people are so dedicated, and they are at some of the lowest rungs of pay for some of the most intimate work that needs to be done in a home and with people and their health issues. People come to my home with cars that barely run, not being able to afford health care insurance themselves for the most part, but still showing up and being very dedicated. And it is just it's a shame that we can't do more for those at those levels, the teachers, the health care workers, the home care workers. So I just want to thank all of them who've helped me personally and all of those from the many agencies who've helped people around the county in work that is often unsung. I wanted to just mention something about the lighting in here. I hate it that we have people come and speak to us, and we've got these bright lights that shine down on several parts of the room. I can see people in the back directly across better than I can see the people who come and stand at our mic, especially on that side of the room. So if there's anything we can do to have people who come speak to us on any issue sit or stand where there's better light, that would be helpful, or to point one of these lights that's in my eyes, I'd be happy to give it up to the speakers as they're speaking. And then I wanted to thank all of those who came to speak to us tonight from their various perspectives. And I wanted to thank in particular the folks from Solar Tompkins and Jonathan Comstock. If you hadn't come yourself, I had my copy of the press release that will be coming out with the numbers that Jonathan gave. I think Marsha Lynch is working with them to finalize that. So watch for that. I think the sponsors, the volunteers, Jonathan, the Sustainable Tompkins, the Park Foundation, our planning department, and the countless hours, Melissa Kemp, who's probably out there doing something now, for those who had their deadlines slightly extended because so many people responded, I think over 1,300 households responded and had our houses evaluated, of which there are, what did you say, 300 and 355 have signed contracts, and a few of us are still waiting for some last pieces of information and had the... I'm allowed to say that, you had to already have been in the door and in the midst of negotiations, but there are some still pending, depending on certain pieces of information. But as of tomorrow, New York State is slightly changing, as they do, the incentive part of the program. So for those of us who are agonizing, is our payback period short enough, or should we do other things in our houses? There's a decision point tomorrow. But thank you for doing the work that it takes to have put that together. The fact that that is now up to, 4.8 megawatts on people's houses through just these two programs. That doesn't count the people who had already put solar on their houses and other forms of energy through other means. We heard from Peter Bardaglio the other day that there are now, I think he came up with a total of 39 megawatts, almost 40 megawatts, of recently built or in stages of development renewable power between the larger scale solar arrays, the wind that Black Oak will be putting in. I don't know if we've got any micro hydro projects going yet, but it's getting to be significant numbers, and that's with still a small fraction of the county. So to those of you who are coming to us with information about what's doable at in various realms, whether it be affordable housing or plants, please keep coming. We're interested in the information, and I want to see us not leave anybody hanging on their own. We don't want to leave those who want to put in plants and bring jobs to us, regardless of where they're looking to locate in the county. We don't want to leave them county hanging on their own. There are ways to reapportion where we're using our energy, which type of energy that we need, we can be exploring. We don't want to leave those in various particular roads or situations hanging on their own. So I'm hoping that we can pull together as a community and figure this out. Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Martha Robertson.
Mike, thank you so much for your kind words and to everyone for your recognition. If you didn't hear my speech, or it's actually on the Facebook page, I think, or website the other night. I started by thanking Nate Shinagawa for helping to convince me to run and helping to show that it was possible. It was an amazing experience, and I'm delighted that I've done it and have been able to meet so many people and learn so much more about our area of upstate New York. And I'll tell you, Brian, boy, I really wish the outside world was a little more like this room. I mean, I've got to be nice. My mom always said, can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. I'll say that, I will miss you on this body, and although it is good you're not going really away. Groton's been magnificently represented by you, and we've all been represented by you and with your integrity and your honesty and your fairness and your openness to all kinds of points of view, and it's really been an honor to work with you. And there's got to be a better way out there, and I'll keep fighting for that, and I know you will too, and we all have to. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Martha. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. I want to say a couple of words about Brian. First of all, it's hard to believe that you actually want to leave this legislature, given all the great times we have here and all the things that we learn. But it's also important to use your knowledge and your skills in a different way to serve the community. You have an opportunity, and I think it will probably be rewarding for you to be able to be there and be involved in the organization and do the things that you will see necessary to do. But I think in the long run, it will also benefit the Sheriff's Department. And I am glad in one way that you're going there, and I'm not glad in another way. But it's been great to have you here, and I wish you the best up there.
Thank you. Mike Sigler. I'm sorry, I've got Leslie McBean Claiborne, then Mike Sigler.
Well, everybody can be glad. I'm not. You get off just making announcements and leaving. I'm just going to be straight up. I'm beginning to think there's something about me. Ever since I've been on this legislature, I sit next to the representative from Groton. They're either on my left and they're on my right, and they all seem to leave. I'm not sure what's going on here. I'm not sure. But Brian, I certainly will miss you. I'm glad to hear that you are going to stay within county government. That's very important. I've known you some, over the years from your work at IPD, your work now with your business, and I know that the skill sets that you have will be extremely, extremely beneficial to our Sheriff's Department. And so I'm thankful that you made that decision to go to the Sheriff's Department, although I'm really mad at you that you're not going to be sitting next to me. And before you leave, you might owe me $1.25. So I'm just putting it out there so I can collect before you leave. But thank you so much for serving with all of us and being as honorable as you are.
Thank you. And just so everybody understands,
once in a while we'll have a quarter bet on real small little things, and I don't generally win a whole lot, so she's got a lot of my quarters.
Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to start with an apology. I am going to have to leave in like 5 minutes. Thursdays are just a terrible day for meetings. So I want to congratulate Martha on a great race. I don't think people really appreciate the district that Martha had to run in. It is the size of the state of New Jersey. I mean, it is enormous to get across that district. Mm. It's multiple media markets. It is just running for Congress. You're talking hundreds of thousands of votes, and just to run is an amazing feat. So, you know, it's amazing that anybody actually throws their hat in the ring for that. Brian, I remember when you first called me and asked me if you should run for the legislature, and I said, sure, of course, why not? And so I'm very glad that you did, and I'm glad that you won, and I'm glad that you served. So you will be a missed voice on the legislature. So
thank you.
Will Burbank, then Nathan.
Thank you, Mike. I, too, will be missing Brian. I think that something nobody's mentioned, I just love your sense of humor, and frequently you've lightened long discussions that have gone on. And Martha, it's great having you back. I hope you I know it's probably going to be a decompression period, but it's really, really, really good having you. We've missed you. I want to thank the folks that spoke tonight. To a person, you helped us better understand and face some very, very difficult problems. It's yet not clear to me what the county can or should be doing. But I appreciated the way the information was presented, and I hope we can move forward together. And please convey that to all the folks to the left. I don't blame them for not wanting to stay for the whole meeting. I did want to, however, make everybody aware of a service that we have in our county that I have been using lately. Maybe you already know this. In the Solid Waste Department, we have an investigator. And that person is tasked with the job, if there is dumping in our county, to go out and try to find out who has been doing it. And
you mean illegal dumping?
Illegal dumping. Thank you. Yes. So I try to get out and walk every day, and one of my little hobbies is pick up litter as I go. But a couple weeks ago, I found a huge quantity that was far exceeded litter. This was like about 10 bags worth of stuff. And I called Solid Waste, spoke with Paul Cowles. He came out, checked it out, did a little investigation. This is like a whole sub area of law enforcement, but he figured out where it came from, contacted that person, and that person came back, removed the bags, and is facing a fine that yet to be determined. So I would encourage other, if you know of illegal dumping, call the Solid Waste people. They did a wonderful job on everybody's behalf. Thank you.
Thank you. Nathan Shinagawa.
Yes, I also wanted to thank Martha for running for Congress. It is probably one of the few people that could say that I actually know what it's like. and it's pretty brutal. And I know you did an amazing job. I know because my family told me. My mom was out on Meadow Street, I think, from 9 to 5, and said she was super excited and proud to do it. And then my sister has been the coordinator field coordinator for Tompkins County, I believe. And she actually the day of the election, after the results came in, she called me crying, you know, and saying that she was like, even though I really, really wanted you to be in Congress with Martha, I never wanted anything more bad in my life than to have her win, you know, and that's what your team did. I mean, my sister was somebody who didn't know she really wanted to work in politics, and after working on your campaign for, you know, gosh, 80 hours a week plus, she now has this sense of purpose that she never had before. And that's just one person that you were able to change through this race. And I know that there are hundreds of others that you were able to change along the way. So, so even though you lost, you won in a lot of ways, too. So I want to congratulate you on that sense.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nathan. Anyone else?
Well, and I just have one thing about Brian. is that, so I was, I, the reason why I wasn't around on election day is that my hospital, we have this big conference every year, and I had to attend, and it was down in Florida, and of course, you know, I just hated the idea of going to Orlando, Florida for a few days. But Bill Clinton was there on election day, and so he was there talking to the attendees, and he talked a little bit about, and gave a speech. And one of the things he talked about is how, you know, just one of his, the things he's most proud of is that he spent millions, billions of dollars studying the human genome. And, you know, that research, since the genome research came out, I mean, now we have a whole new class of drugs that are related to genetics. We have a whole new fields of medicine that are being able to find ways to cure disease and help people live longer and fuller lives. But he said that even though there was all these things that came out of it, the thing he was most proud of with that human genome project is that it showed that amongst human beings, you know, 99.5% of our DNA, right, regardless of wherever we are from the world, is the same. And so it just showed that we have so much more in common than we think otherwise. And he says that it's unfortunate, though, that we spend most of our conflicts in the world are about that 0.5%, right? And how much of a shame it is. And now the reason why this relates to Brian is that, you know, I'm getting to that.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Is that Bill Clinton's right that we spend a lot of time on that 0.5%. What's different? But I think what's been great about Brian is that he's not a 0.5% kind of guy. He's that 99.5% of the guy. He's the guy that always thinks about what we have in common. And, you know, being a colleague of his, it's issues have never been partisan. Issues have always been about what's right and wrong, what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And that sense of whatever is good for the common good, right, what we have in common, right, is really, I think, what drives your decision making. And it makes you a very fair and effective legislator that has definitely earned the respect of the members of this body. So, you know, I want to thank you for your service, and it's been a real honor to work with you.
Thank you.
And to continue to work with you.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Dooley Kiefer.
For the remaining speakers that are still here, the comments and offers of help from some of our residents to figure out how they can help us encourage developers to find better ways to achieve the developments they want by not using fossil fuels but finding alternative approaches. That is a tremendous offer of help that we're getting from them. And it's difficult being on the county legislature because we don't have any land use power to speak of. And we can share the information with the municipalities that do have zoning authority and give building permits. So I don't know whether we have any technical staff and are among our 700 plus employees. But it's the kind of work that I wish we could be doing, too, because it's so basic and so important. It was nice to hear the INHS director here pointing out what is already in place, but the only way to answer this pipeline quandary is really to show developers that there is another way and they don't need to tie us to fossil fuels that should stay in the ground, which you've heard me say before. And so I want to ask our county attorney whether, having heard the description of these easement papers, whether we have any way to affect the outcome of this project. I saw that our county administrator had looked into what permitting process, if any, we have, and it's very minor sounding to me, but maybe the county attorney will come up with another angle that we can be helpful about. So thank you.
Jonathan, if you want to respond, you need your microphone.
Yeah, I'd be happy to look into it.
further. Obviously, I consulted with Joe regarding that memo that he sent around regarding permits, and that, you know, does accurately reflect the county's power to grant permits to work on a county highway. Just to be clear, and what he says is that the county has that particular road simply by use. We have no property right in it other than use. And that's largely because it's an old road, and that's how we acquired most old roads. Pipelines go under the roads, and we do not use that part. So that's really the sole property of the neighboring property owners. And like you say, counties don't really have any land use power, and it's not really within our land. So while I can look into it, there's limitations on what we can do, given that it's not really on our land.
Thank you. Anyone else for a first shot? Then Martha would like to come back for a second chance. Martha?
Yeah, I've been busy. I didn't read the memo. I'm sorry. But do towns have any authority? And I know there's sort of maintenance of the shoulder and that sort of thing. Where does that?
Well, the memo does discuss that. Towns could have authority on a town road if they have ownership interest in that road. This is a county road. We do, as described in the memo, have a permit system for work in a county right-of-way. The actual pipeline would not be in the right-of-way, but they might have to work in the county right-of-way to get to the area where they would put a pipeline. But basically, we have a permit system for that, which is based on basically a long series of criteria, but those criteria all relate to the safety of doing the project, being able to afford to bond and make sure that the road is returned to its condition it was to begin with, that the work can be done safely, that kind of thing. It's not geared to what the project is, and one can't start doing that after 30 years of basically having a system. And that actually, the permit system is authorized under state law, and we basically follow the state law. There is a set of the criteria, and the on projects, the highway department always makes sure that whoever's doing the project, which could be something as small as putting your driveway in to a major pipeline, that the criteria are followed in working in the right of way. But it's not never a matter of do you like the project or not. It's always how it affects the right of way.
Thank you.
Peter.
Yeah, I have a question for Jonathan that I was trying to listen to those people and understand what they're talking about. But it seems does a gas company have the right of the right to condemned land so that they can build a pipeline? I imagine they must. Otherwise, how would we have developed the whole telephone system? They must have the right to put in telephone poles and so forth. Is that correct, or do they have to get the permission of the people?
It's largely correct. I mean, they're basically pipelines that meet the criteria where they have to get what's called a certificate of environmental and compatibility and public need from the Public Service Commission, which is a whole large process they have to go through with public hearings, et cetera, et cetera. But that applies to pipelines only of a certain size. And pipelines which don't meet that criteria don't have to go through that more vigorous process.
But what happens if those people, for instance, just say, well, I'm not going to sign your thing? Does that mean that the gas company can't put the line in there?
No, the gas company would then resort to an eminent domain proceeding, if it wanted to continue with the pipeline.
But they don't need a government to make the eminent domain request for them, right? They have their own power to get that.
Right. They need a court to authorize it, but not a government.
Okay. Thank you.
Can we move on, folks? Carol, something short?
I just want to ask Jonathan. So My understanding is that if there are site review requirements, I mean, not necessarily our jurisdiction, although I've heard conflicting things about whether government bodies that have road rights of way are required to also, you know, co-sign an easement or have our own easement. So I have heard conflicting things about that. But if there are other, if there's jurisdiction by towns, site plan review, for example, do the gas companies need to meet any of other local requirements that may not be ours?
Well, typically, and I got to be honest, when I was in private practice, I worked on several large pipeline projects and know a lot more about big pipeline projects than little ones. On the large pipeline projects, as part of the certificate of environmental compatibility and public need, the state is preeminent, and meaning the local municipalities don't have the right to regulate, and the theory is that they have the right to participate in that process. I honestly know less about smaller pipelines.
I guess, so the jury is still out on some of this. Peter asked the question, but I'm sure that people will be looking into it.
Okay, can we move on? Thank you. We've got some folks waiting in the audience. I'd really like to take their resolution so I don't have to wait for all of this. Out of the Facilities Committee, I believe that Lee is here to hear Resolution G. Is that correct? Okay. Dave, could you please move that for us?
Okay, I'd like to move Resolution G, Document ID 5157, appropriation from contention fund to support the costs of acquisition and installation of automatic external defibrillator devices in county facilities and vehicles, and to provide required training in the use of those devices. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Julie Kiefer. Discussion. Ready to vote? Those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? I believe it's unanimous. Martha's not here. Unanimous, but one. Was there...
What?
Oh, Peter's off, too. Okay.
Excuse me. What resolution we just act on?
It was public safety.
It was public safety, G.
Actually, it needed to come out of facilities. There was a mistake in the agenda.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh.
I should have said that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wondered why I had that.
Wondered why I didn't.
Let's move to economic development. Will, would you move resolutions K and J?
Okay. Resolution K, which is... approving the issuance of Tompkins County Development Corporation of up to $2 million aggregate principal amount tax-exempt revenue bonds for the William George Agency of Children's Services, Inc. Project, Series 2014, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin. Discussion. Julie Kiefer.
excuse me. There are two bond resolutions on our agenda. And for some reason, they don't have similar formats. One uses italics for some words and the other doesn't. And I'm puzzled whether they should be identical. Seems like they should, and I would leave that to our legislative clerk to make them identical, maybe.
Okay.
I was concerned that when I asked to see the minutes that go with both of these resolutions, because they each had a separate public hearing, and one in Dryden and one in Cayuga Heights, we do not have a copy of the minutes. And that's just a small glitch that's missing. So I'd like to make sure that in the future we actually have all the documents we're supposed to have. I'm not going to vote against these, but I'm just concerned that we should have all the things we need.
Okay.
Anyone else? Ready to vote on Resolution K? All those in favor, this is a roll call?
No.
Okay, just a hand vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? I have one opposed.
Okay, and the second resolution is approving the issuance of Tompkins County Development Corporation of up to $60 million aggregate principal amount tax-exempt revenues bonds for Kendall Ithaca Project, Series 2014, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion? Carol?
Yeah. Well, Will asked before, as these folks were here talking to us, what are the things that the county can do to ensure that the projects that we're associated with are energy efficient or to encourage that. And my answer is that one of the things that we can be doing is ensuring that anybody who comes to us for support of any kind should at least be asked the question, what kind of energy are you using? What kind of energy efficiency measures are you implementing? If we're going to be giving you public support of any kind, that it's a question that you should at least be asked or be required to have an audit, an energy audit, as opposed to a financial audit. We ask what you're doing when people submit plans to public bodies, they get asked, what's your water? Is the water, is the sewer going to be safe? How are you impacting our roads, we ask. How's your project impacting our roads? So it's one thing that we could ask. So I did pursue this, and I have found out on this one. But again, not because we asked early enough to have had it make a difference to the planning of the project. But on their own, Kendall has gone and made sure that they are going to be building a LEED certified building. It won't be as high a level as what the affordable housing people have been able to do, but it will be a LEED certified building. They retained a consultant, much as we did Johnson Controls, to look at what kinds of measures can they put in, and they will be. They were working with, through the NYSERDA, the New York Sun, solar potential, and while they weren't, I don't know if they didn't pursue it or they didn't get one through the round that got announced recently, they're still pursuing this, and there's going to be rolling rounds of New York Sun starting in January. So they are going to be building this 84,000 square foot facility, which certainly we should be asking, something of that size. What are you doing with energy? They're going to be building it so that it is solar compatible, so that when they can build an array, it'll be able to be hooked up. And they're also looking at moving forward, maybe in the future, with as part of either remote net metering or community net metering, when that gets passed, to be able to institute solar. I don't know whether they're using heat exchangers or anything. I didn't get that level of information. But I applaud them for having thought this through. I'm glad they did it without us having asked. And I hope that we'll be asking in the future at earlier stages. So I'm pleased to support this project.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. So we'll go back to the regular order. Thank you, Mike Stamm, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Appreciate it.
Chair's report. I would just want, particularly for the folks at home, to understand Brian has told us that he will be leaving the legislature, and that will cause a vacancy on this legislature in his district, which is all of the town of Groton, part of the town of Dryden, and part of the town of Lansing. And under the county charter, because of the timing of this vacancy, it will be up to this legislature to schedule a public vote in his district, an election, and that must be scheduled within 75 days of the time he steps down. So I'm going to ask Nathan Shinagawa, as chair of the Government Operations Committee, and Jonathan Wood and Joe Mariana, to work together and to bring forth a resolution that we could act on at the first meeting in December, if Brian is going to leave at the end of November, so that we can let the people know as early as possible in Groton what the date of that election will be.
And if I want to move to Groton and run there.
Groton's a nice community.
It is a nice community. Yeah, that's fine, Mike. Yeah.
Okay, that's all I wanted to report on tonight. I have no appointments tonight. Let's go to reports by our administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. I just have a few items on my list tonight. Beginning with shared services, we've talked several times about the TCOG Shared Service Initiative to look at whether there may be opportunities for shared services mergers and consolidations to save money. This is all coming out of the property tax freeze. So we began yesterday with the first of a series of meetings about specific administrative functions that may lend themselves to centralization or to shared services. You may recall that we've talked about a number of back office prospects, including IT, finance, which means purchase payroll and so forth, personnel, tax collection, we've talked about, code enforcement, we've talked about, grants management. So there's a number of specific focus areas that we want to look at, and yesterday was the guinea pig on how we're going to approach the review of that. Three legislators were there. There were a total of, I think, 35 people who participated. And the way we've structured these discussions is we've tried to invite people who are experts, practitioners, and stakeholders in each of these areas so that everyone has a seat at the table. So it's clear that there's not some kind of a hidden agenda, a preordained outcome, or anything like that, but instead it's a conversation about where we may be able to, again, improve service and save money by shared services and consolidations. I think it was a good meeting. We went almost 2 hours. Greg Potter and Lauren Cottrell did a great job explaining what we've already done, which is really impressive. And again, this is why it's so difficult to find new things to do, because we've already done so much in the way of shared services. But they gave us a good foundation of what's already been done. And then it was a good group discussion about what else is out there. Where are the gaps in services? How could smaller governments benefit by a full-service IT operation like we've had? So in the end, we took a lot of notes. We had a few good ideas. We've agreed that the next step is to do a survey to look at costs and capacities around governments, local governments in the county. I will tell you, we're not going to change the world on this. I don't foresee a single IT department that would serve everybody, but I do think there are opportunities that will grow out of here for us to do things together to share services and again, all of us become a little more efficient and effective. That will be the first of these meetings. I think next in the batting order may be finance and the payroll personnel, things like that, which we'll try to do in the next several weeks. Kind of some other updates. We've talked before about the Energize New York initiative, which is a way to provide low-interest, long-term loans to commercial property owners to do energy-related improvements, to find ways to convert to renewable energy, to save energy, and so forth. It is given strength by the fact that the loan that's given to do these things is repaid through a person's property tax bill. And if there are defaults, those defaults are collected through the tax enforcement process. So it gives these loans a lot of strength that they wouldn't otherwise have. This is done through a quasi-governmental unit that's created by New York State. It is something that we've looked at the staff level. Planning was very much involved in this. The city was involved. Dooley went to a meeting earlier. And we'd like to bring them back. So we'd like to have the legislature become exposed to what this plan is. Carol has agreed to put a presentation by the Energized People at the end of the peak agenda on November 19th. And I'm hoping more than just committee members are able to attend that. We think this is pretty important and hope that you'll be able to attend that. So you'll be getting, I think Katie is going to be working with Carol to get an invitation out to legislators for that meeting. Following that meeting, the Energized People will be going to City Hall to make a similar presentation to the City Council so that we all come up to speed at about the same time. So again, that's November 19th. The climate survey we've talked a lot about, we now have a target date for doing the survey. It's in mid-January, so we'll spend the next month or two doing some ground laying to make sure that we get a good response to that survey and have the right questions on the table. So again, we'll look to mid-January for that. The last item on my list, if you've been by the Human Services Building over the past few days, the project is underway. So they've begun to work on the expansion of human services that will ultimately allow us to move day reporting into that space. By this time next year, we should be, if not completely done, then almost done with that project. The LIVSE room will be out of commission beginning, I think it's November 14th, so we have it through the end of the next week. And then we will be moving meetings around to other county buildings. So again, that important project is now underway. And that's my report.
Questions? Martha? Then Leslie?
I have talked to people in 11 counties around the state. When I talk about the health insurance consortium, people go, So, I mean, I think there's... I wonder if we could get points for getting other other counties to do it, or I don't know, like bring them all like we did bring Cortland in. Is there any reason we couldn't do a multi-county thing?
We could do multi-county. We've talked to Cortland County. Cortland County's numbers aren't terribly different than ours, but the smaller municipalities within Cortland County are a lot like the smaller municipalities here. So you know that the city of Cortland has come over, and they saved a significant amount of money. So could we add others? We could. I'm not sure that we would get credit for that under the governor's plan. And I've complained before because that consortium that does save $1 million a year, it's as if it doesn't exist in the way the state's accounting for savings through shared services. But, yeah, our consortium could grow larger.
Did you say it has to be contiguous counties?
If the way I understand it, it has to be anything that comes into the consortium has to be contiguous. But we have a lot of contiguous counties next and cities and towns therein.
So. Okay. Good. Thanks.
Leslie Levine, Claiborne.
Joe, are the conversations on shared services, I heard you name some people who are in the room, and it seems like it's all within our internal county government. Are those the larger conversations that include others on the outside of us as well?
If I didn't make that clear, I should have. It began with internal conversations. What can we do? The meetings that began yesterday, though, invitations went out to every municipal government in the county. So it went to TCOG members, but it also a special invitation went out to the clerks because they were interested in what's going on. So they're on that list. Again, we had 35 or so folks yesterday from all over the county.
And may I ask a follow-up? And those let's say IT, that conversation is with all the IT people were at the table and thinking.
Well, that was our hope was we would get a good mix of IT people. And, you know, once you get below a certain size of government, they don't have their IT people. They really rely on outsiders and what they can do on their own. But we wanted, again, the experts, the practitioners, and the stakeholders. So some of them were IT people. We had a few of those. We had a lot of people who were basically folks who relied on automated systems or wanted automated systems. So it could be a town supervisor, it could be a village clerk. We had a good representation of people who were users that kind of intermingled with the people who were the techies that could speak to those issues.
Okay.
And that's what we hope to do. That's the format that we want to do in the remainder of these meetings. It seemed to work pretty well.
Thank you.
James Dennis.
Thank you, Mike. One serious comment and one and a couple not so serious. To sort of relate to what Martha said, I was looking at our NYSAC website that comes to us, and there's some counties out in the western part of New York State who are talking about forming a consortium, and Tompkins County was mentioned in that. They said, well, Tompkins County did this, and they were relating to some of the things that we have already done with ours. So it occurred to me that I'm expecting someone in the county will get a phone call from somebody in another county and say, you know, meet me for lunch. How'd you guys do this? But, you know, so it's pretty clear statewide that they know about what we have done. My other comment is sort of serious, but the Cortland County budget passed last week, or it will be passed soon, and our county administrator assisted them in the Cortland Post Dispatch, I believe is the name of the paper. Joe's name is mentioned as helping formulate their budget for 2015, and I believe he did it on a weekend visit, so and without a fee. So it occurred to me as a longtime legislator that Tioga County doesn't have a county administrator. Cortland County doesn't have a county administrator. We do. So what we do is make a regional county administrator, double its salary, hire three good people, and let them go out in these other counties and figure out how to do budgets. And I think we get credit for that one. It's next to a terrible idea.
Uh-oh, Joe.
Joe doesn't like to
watch out, Joe.
Started twitch already.
So, at any rate, I think it's important to note that we've shared our knowledge and our best person to go over there and help Cortland County when they were behind the eight ball and pull their budget together. So I'm sure they appreciate it. And I just wanted to let everyone know that, you know, Joe helped out another county.
Jim, that's true. Cortland has proposed its budget within the tax cap. And came down from initial figures, as I understand it, of a $2 million hole.
Don't tell Joe.
And they're very appreciative of the help that they were able to receive from Joe.
Don't make it sound so good.
He deserves what
charging $6,000 a day.
And Jim, on the other issue about the consortiums, when we had NYSAC last February, the conference, one of the things that NYSAC was proposing was some legislation. There were a number of county groups that wanted to do the consortium, but they were stumbling on the same thing that we had so much trouble with, and that was the initial reserves that had to be put there. Mm-hmm. But perhaps we can show our experience now that we've actually put those forward and did not lose them. They actually have been paid back and have kept our rates down. So that's something we can share with other areas, Martha. Somebody else, Dooley had her hand up, sorry.
Well, this is a small question follow-up from the IT group meeting. I read in the newspaper the next day that the city has a vacancy in the IT directorship, I guess, and they voted to abolish the position. And I didn't understand how that related to what the city presented at your meeting, so I'm puzzled. And I thought maybe you could explain what was going on.
I don't think I can shed light on that.
Okay.
I can.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
Go ahead.
They actually combined the city clerk now supervises both IT and her office.
Okay. Thank you. She was there, certainly.
Yeah.
Julie Holt.
Julie.
So what they abolished, they took it out of the charter was what they were. It had been a position by requirement in the city charter. So it's not that they don't have anybody doing IT. It's
but they did remove the person that was in that role.
He hasn't been there in a year.
Okay.
Well, remember, this is on Joe's report we're talking. So.
Yep.
You have one more thing?
Yeah, I do, actually, because we're talking about the consolidation issues and so forth. I've never heard an explanation or a final determination as to lookbacks, because, you know, we were certainly counting on this to count as one of them. And you just said that it didn't, so.
Well, the rule right now is they'll look back only to 2012. Our consortium was formed in 2011. Now, we've invited members of the state delegation here for the TCOG meeting, which is the 20th. It's later this month. I don't know that we've heard back from any of them yet about whether they're going to be attending. I'm looking at Michelle to see if she's got anything. But that's the purpose. The primary purpose of that meeting is to talk to them about trying to move that date backward.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've talked before. It's our understanding that the legislature, when they inserted this, the look back in, that didn't exist to begin with, they wanted a very liberal interpretation of that look back. They wanted to go back as far as seemed reasonable at all. I think the legislature may have been surprised when it was so tight, when it was 2012. So we do want to talk to them about, can they revisit that and can they change that rule to look backward farther?
And as it relates to the cap, starting in 2015 or for next year, remind me again what the percentage of savings is that they're looking for?
It sounds small, but it's not. It's 1% of levy, and you have to sustain that for a 3-year period. So when it's explained, what's 1% of levy? Well, you know what 1% of levy is. It's $450,000,
mm-hmm.
And to be able to find a $450,000 savings through a shared service or a consolidation is I don't want to say it's impossible, because nothing is impossible, but it's about as close to impossible as I can imagine. And so that's our difficulty. What's interesting is we did achieve that in 2011. So it's 1% of the combined levies of all the participants in a shared service or consolidation. That's your goal. Well, if you look at the $1 million we saved to the consortium, and you look at the tax levies of all the governments who participated in the consortium, it's about 1.3% of our combined levies.
That one item?
That one item. So if they went back 365 days or one day, depending on how you define it,
mm-hmm.
We would hit the mark on that one project.
Okay.
Joe, on my calendar, I have that Council of Government meetings with the state delegation on the 20th of November. That's a Thursday at 3 o'clock. 2 o'clock, sorry. Martha?
Yeah, $450,000, that's, in terms of staff members, that's maybe, how many is that, roughly?
Without benefits is 10. With benefits is probably 7 or so staff people.
So we have to find something that cuts 7 people.
Okay. We want to hear next from our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I do not have a report.
Any questions for John?
Why not?
Then next is our finance director, Rick Snyder.
And I have no report this evening.
Such a good one you gave us last time. We wanted some more good ones like that. Any questions for Rick? Any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Let's talk about the consent agenda. There are no appointments on it, but out of the Economic Development Committee, we have Resolution A. Remember, if you want to talk about this, just say off. Resolution A, ID 5206, it's the 2014 Tourism Program Budget Adjustment from Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grants to New Tourism Initiative Grants. Resolution B, ID 5205, Award of Fall 2014 Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grants. Resolution C, ID 5204, Award of Fall 2014 New Tourism Initiative Grants. Resolution D, 5203, Award of Fall 2014 Community Celebrations Grants. Out of Government Operations, Resolution E,
returned school taxes. Resolution F, returned village taxes. Could I have a motion on the consent agenda? By Leslie McBean Claiborne, seconded by Peter Stein. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Mike?
Yes.
In connection with those tourism resolutions, I would ask that packet pages 11B be included in the minutes, because those are the pages that include the dates of when the events are going to happen. And in past years, I've tried to get the dates into our resolution packets, but they're still not there. So if those two pages could go in the minutes, that would take care of that concern.
Can they go in the notes? They have to be in the minutes.
I'd ask for the minutes.
All right. I think it's 7:25. Let's take our break now and then come back and do the regular committee reports. Let's take 10 minutes. Come back at 25 of. Okay, let's move through our regular committee reports. Charter Review Committee met yesterday, and we reviewed the mental health section, mental health department, and also the finance department section. And we'll be meeting again in a month. I'm not sure whether we're going to be finished this year, and if we're not, whoever's the chair, I hope we'll continue that committee so that it can be completed hopefully before the end of next year. Can I answer any questions? Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. We had a meeting earlier, and all of our resolutions are going to be passed or were passed by other committees. But we had a nice time for 15 minutes together. Our next meeting is November 24th, and November 18th is a very important meeting, or the next LEDGE meeting, when the county budget will be on the docket to be voted on. And Mike had a public hearing on the override, repealing the override law. That will also be on the agenda. So if you have plans to make a budget amendments, please think about them and let people know what you're going to do. But November 18th is the day. So thank you all very much.
Questions for Jim? Let's not forget, let's try to get a good turnout for the public hearing. Old Library Committee will meet tomorrow, and we will be discussing both the RFP proposal and a proposed resolution to send on to this full board for consideration. Those, whatever of the four responders to the request for expressions of interest that we feel ought to be recommended or considered, or all of them. We'll see what happens. Anything I can answer about that? Public Safety Committee, Brian Robinson, Chair.
Thanks, Mike. I did have one resolution, but Dave stole it, so I don't have that.
Kathy told me it was in the wrong thing, and I should have announced why I was cheating.
We have not met since the last meeting of this body. There is a meeting next Monday, the 10th, at 3:30, right here in this room. Just a couple of things of note. We do have, from the Department of Emergency Response, Christina Dravis, and the name escapes me, but the QA person that she hired are coming to give a presentation. All information that I've gotten is that that area of concern is now running very well. And they are certainly going to speak to that. They're going to speak about our accreditation efforts in that department. So that should be a good presentation. The other thing that's going to happen is a a resolution. It's actually a little bit different from a outside source, and maybe I'll let Leslin speak about it a little bit in terms of the source, but it has to do with declaring freedom from domestic violence as a human right. Do you want to explain a little bit where that?
Certainly. This resolution is a resolution that I have signed on to, so it's more or less coming from me, but by way of Cornell Law students, the law clinic, and professor who have jumped on board in a movement across internationally about declaring having human right, good Lord, domestic violence, freedom from domestic violence, declared as a human right. Now, we're asking for it to come to public safety on Monday, particularly because we were interested in having it voted on by this legislative body prior to International Human Rights Day, and in the hopes that folks will move to pass it, I'm hoping, which is December 11th. And public safety would meet again December 8th, but this body would not meet again until after December 11th, and that's the reason why I asked for it to be on this public safety agenda instead. So the professor and law students intend to come to public safety on Monday also to speak to it. They did send along with a draft resolution. They sent to me a white paper, background, some background information about it as well, if anyone is interested in seeing that.
Okay. There's also a couple of the normal routine items on there. I personally will not be there on Monday. I've got a couple of vacation days I need to burn, so I got no, I'm just kidding. I'm actually on special assignment, then have to go to Charlotte and get acquainted with my two-month-old granddaughter. That was planned a long time ago. So I will not be there, and you will be in the able hands of Jim Dennis. And I will be glad to answer any questions if there is any.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
I had a very nice report about the climate survey, but the county administrator stole it. No report followed after that.
Questions for Leslie? Health and Human Services Committee, Peter Stein, chair.
We have not met until since I last reported. I have a resolution, ID number 5084, an appropriation from the contingent fund terminal pay the health department, and I'd like to move that.
Is there a second? Second by Julie Kiefer. Any discussion? We need a short form roll call. Go ahead.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Thank you. And I want to report when our next meeting will be. It will be November 12th. That's an unusual day for it because November 11th is a holiday. That would be our usual time. So it's the next day at the same time, 3:30. Thank you. That's all I have.
Any questions for Peter? Thanks, Pete. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna is the vice chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. We have not met since the last legislature meeting. However, we will be meeting on the 17th of November. I do have two resolutions to move forward. One is Resolution I, ID 5178. Resolution in support of statewide campaign to recover more textiles from the waste stream, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed? That's unanimous.
The second resolution is Resolution J, ID 5175, establishing a unit charge for the 2015 solid waste annual fee. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin. Discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? We have one opposed. Anything else, Dave?
And that concludes my report. Thank you very much.
Questions for David? Economic Development Committee, Will Burrank, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. Well, we did meet. We met this past Monday, and we had a very, very nice presentation on the Finger Lakes reuse project, which sort of what they're doing currently up at their Tripphammer location, and their really impressive plans for the new facility that will be opening down on the old Elmira Road. Once again, the reason I invited them there is you know, they not only do really good work in terms of figuring out how to reuse things that formerly would have been thrown away, you know, ranging from, you know, a desk to a whole house. But they are employing people. They're a very good job development project. They have they're paying the livable wage, and they have a really, really sort of very ambitious agenda. So if you haven't gone up and visited their current facility, go up. There's a lot of really interesting stuff happened with more good to come. We also had our normal presentation from TCAD and a special topic which Michael and Ed Marks sort of co-led, which is had to do with some land that the county owns up near the airport, which has long been thought of as a possible location for an industrial park or some other kind of facility. And we sort of talked a little bit about what's there and what its potential could be, and basically decided that probably the logical next step would be to do a study to see what is needed and what really would work there. We will be continuing that, and I will bring you up to date as we learn more. Did I see a hand? Okay. We also, of course, did the tourism awards, which we thank you for all passing those today. And I want to link that to a very, very nice event that happened today at noon. We had a gathering in the pouring rain down near Stewart Park, ribbon-cutting and unveiling of a trailhead marker that's going to basically celebrate Stewart Park and Stewart Stein as an innovator for tourism and trails and a lot of other good things. So Mike said some very good things on behalf of the county, and it was just a really nice event. And at that event, I learned about it was announced that there are going to be a meeting coming up on the 18th of November to talk about all the possible new ideas for Stewart Park. And Stewart Park has enormous untapped potential. At 5 o'clock at Cinemopolis, there will be basically a presentation on all the different possibilities. The reason it relates to us, as you know, the park is a city park, but it serves a much larger community. And I think county residents, regardless of whether you live in the city, have an interest in that. And I would hope there might be some ways that we can eventually find ways to assist this effort. It certainly is a key part of our whole tourist initiative. Anyway, that was pretty much it. Our next meeting will be on December 1st, Monday as usual, at 3:30 at the old jail. I don't know if there are any questions.
Brian?
I'll pass. I'll just ask later.
Leslie?
I don't have a question for Will, but I certainly want to echo the sentiments about Finger Lakes reuse. I work at GEAC, for folks who don't know, and we have a program called the Conservation Corps, where we essentially are teaching young people about preservation, conservation, restoration efforts, and developing that interest in that field of work. And Finger Lakes Reuse has been a very good training center, training place for them as a starting point. And I'm talking young people from, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. And they have been marvelous. A couple of years ago at the start of the program, they've been involved with us since the start of the program. And there were lots of newspaper coverage about these children learning to deconstruct a house. It was the first time I'd heard the word deconstruct. And they were just so excited about that and still talk about the skills that they learn and develop from being a part of that. So big kudos to Finger Lakes Reuse on their new digs. Hopefully they'll come up to speed and on the work that they continue to do in this community. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Anything else? Thanks, Will. Government Operations Committee, Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
Why don't we start with my resolution? I have Resolution M, Appropriation Contingent Fund to pay 2012 fourth quarter payment to the American Red Cross County Administration.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion. We're going to need a short form roll call on this. Please call the roll.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Sure, it's an old bill. I want to pay. Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Any no's? That's unanimous.
Okay. And so at the last government operations meeting, we had quite the eventful number of topics, though we didn't have any action that really came out of those other than the resolutions we just talked about. And so the first thing that I'll go over is the apprenticeship program. We sent out a letter asking for different contractors and unions to give their feedback on the apprenticeship requirement that we have for county projects that are over $1 million. We had one person that spoke against the apprenticeship programs that were, the apprenticeship requirement. And then the rest of the attendees were mostly union folks who talked about how apprenticeship programs actually are can make projects still price competitive. They tried to give some background as to why the city decided to let go of its apprenticeship requirement. And in lieu of not having J.R. Claiborne from Common Council there to talk about it in detail, we decided that we're going to just continue this discussion onto the next Government Operations Committee meeting. But it seems from the committee that there's actually interest in of maybe even lowering the number. Right now we actually say that there's the apprenticeship requirement for projects over $1 million. There were legislators there that were interested in moving it to $500,000. And so that will be certainly part of our discussion. We did try to, since there was only one person that was really opposed to the measure, I did give him an extra opportunity to speak and ask some additional questions on why it is a burden to have these apprenticeship programs. But there wasn't a compelling anti-sentiment on that requirement. Any questions on that?
May I ask one, Nate?
Yes.
By lowering the ceiling from $1 million to $500,000, wouldn't that cause a problem for smaller companies?
Well, so that was what the one gentleman had that was here, and I forgot exactly what place he was from.
McPherson Builders.
McPherson Builders, yes. And that was what he said, because there are requirements related to his apprenticeship programs to have certain amount, to have a certain number of projects, to have supervision over a certain amount of time, and then to which our attendees from the unions were countering, saying that, you know, it's possible to join in, do temporary contracts with places that do have apprenticeship programs, mm-hmm. so that you could meet that requirement. Also, there was a lot of discussion about apprenticeship programs and actually how, you know, when you pay somebody as an apprentice, you're paying them, you can pay them less than the prevailing wage because they are, they're in training. And so if you look at the index of the overall labor cost of a project, if you bring in apprentices, you can actually have it's possible to have a lower cost as well. And so, anyway, Arel wasn't at our meeting, so we really want to get feedback from Arel, and so we'll wait for his feedback, from JR's feedback, or from other members of Common Council if they're willing to come or want to come, to get more of an understanding of this issue. The second big thing we talked about
was... And I just want to say thank you to your committee for taking on that. I know it's a difficult issue to be looking at, but it's time.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I'm happy to do it. The next thing we talked about was the living wage. And Joe put together a very comprehensive report. And Joe, did this report go out to other legislators as well?
I don't think so. It's in the packet. So it's in GEO's packet, but it wasn't. So I don't think circulated.
I think it would be worthwhile to send this out to all legislators by email. So they could see this. But what Joe did is he did an analysis of the living wage as it relates to our contracted agencies. And really, we came across some really interesting information. For example, right now there's about 2,000 employees that are directly involved in providing contracted services to the county. And of those 2,000 employees, actually 91% of them are paid at least the AFCU living wage. So that is very good news. And if you look at actual contracts, it's about 79% of the 155 contracts. So 91% of the employees, so that's 1,788 out of 1,994. And then of the contracts, 123 of the 155. Now, the remaining 10% or so of the employees, they're mostly in services like in the healthcare setting, where we have actually very little influence over what those folks are paid. That's especially as it relates to home health, so mental health services, et cetera. So we did ask Joe, the Government Operations Committee, we did ask Joe if we could find some way of getting some more formal language to say, all right, we're aiming to get as many folks in the living wage as possible, having a living wage as possible, their contracted employees. But can we have some sort of exemption for the ones that we just don't have control over, right? Because if we don't have some sort of exemption, we're always going to be deficient by no fault of our own. Another thing that Joe talked about, which was really interesting, is that you'll recall that we had legislative action over the course of this past year when it related to the Meals on Wheels programs to boost those workers up to a living wage. But we actually, through the budget process and through through the contract process itself, right? We've been able to move at least two more agencies, I believe. Was it two or three?
Three.
Three agencies up to a living wage. And to me, that is a real testament of this process because, with anything, when you're making a change, there's political action and then there's institutional action, right? And political action requires, people coming over to the legislature, giving public comment, putting pressure on us to take action. But when we institutionalize a process, right, by the structure that we have set in place, for example, setting out to all these contracted agencies that this is a goal of the county, actually having a form that asks them to say whether or not they pay a living wage, and if they don't, the reasons why. But all these, and then also integrating this into our budgeting process, it means that with little, quote, political or activist type of action, we're actually able to get results on a living wage through institutional process and structural processes. So that is a good thing, because what it means is that it took, over the past year, it took legislative action to move one agency up, but structural processes that we've created have allowed for three agencies to move up to a living wage. See, so that, why are you nodding your head, Carol?
Well, it just because it would not have become an administrative action if we hadn't had the political...
Yeah, I know, but you're missing the point. The whole point is that political action and activist action is not sustainable, right? You have to turn all that activist action into structural action so that it lasts long term. And it doesn't require people showing up to the legislature in order to do it, right? So that's what I'm saying. So, yes, I'm not discrediting. I'm saying that the activists have done a great job in making this an issue, but the county legislature has taken action to structuralize it, or to create structure around it, and that's going to help it sustain for the long term. And so, anyway, that was just a lot of good news on the county front, and obviously this is an issue that we're going to continue to monitor, and as more contracts come up, you know, we'll be able to have department heads bring that to Joe's attention and talk about it at the legislature level. I mean, at the GO level. Joe, did you have any other comments related to that?
I think you summarized it very well.
Okay, great. All right, and then the next thing that we talked about is translation services. And we did have a resolution about basically about a federal requirement that we provide translation services to limited English proficient residents. But we don't really have it well spelled out in the county. And so Karen Baer brought it forth a resolution to basically affirm that we're following these federal law. And but there was a lot of conversation that came out of that, because yes, you know, we want to say that we're following federal law, but then the question is, well, how are we? And what are the limits of that? There's a lot of education that the legislature needs related to that. You know, for example, the law says that we have to make accommodations for, what is it, for translation or interpretation. Like, let's say if somebody comes.
To be both.
Both, yeah. And let's say if somebody speaks, you know, only can understand Greek, and they wanted to come to a legislature meeting, right? Well, we'd have to make some sort of accommodations for them that are reasonable, quote, reasonable, to accommodate that limited English proficient person. But how we do that is there was still questions in the Government Operations Committee about. And so there is actually is it a policy that you guys are working on, Joe, or is it a guidelines or something like that?
It's a plan.
A plan. So we didn't have copies of that plan, which is the real how. And so we're going to go over that at our next Government Operations Committee meeting. So as a result, we weren't able to take action on this resolution. In conclusion, a very eventful meeting, despite having no action that really came out of it. We are definitely moving forward on a lot of priorities of the legislature.
Questions for Nathan? Leslin, then Peter, then Dooley.
I think I have a question on everything you just said, Nathan.
Yeah.
The apprenticeship policy, did I understand you right? There's going to be continued discussion at the committee?
Yes.
And is there a plan for some kind of action, or just affirming what we have in place or waiting for more information?
If I had to read the legislature, I would say, I mean, not the legislature, the Government Operations Committee, I would say that there is a sense of the body that to either keep it in place or to even modify it so that it's a lower number that qualifies. Though we don't plan on any action. We just plan on continuing the discussion.
Okay. And I'm glad to hear about the report on the living wage. And I would say that if I were the two gentlemen who had been coming repeatedly to this body and bringing that issue forward, and who were sort of the catalyst behind us really taking a look at this, I would wonder, where are we in terms of what's happening at reuse, not reuse?
Solid waste.
In terms of that, and maybe it's not something we can speak about in public, but hearing other people are being moved up, and here are these two guys who brought, I just wonder, is there any movement there? Was that one of the things on the list of contracts? Maybe we can't talk about it. I don't know. Executive session? I don't know.
I think the challenge is that they're still under contract, at least until...
Long-term contract. We will. I mean, if you'd like to discuss this in the near future, we will be happy to do that.
Near future.
That'd be great.
Okay, thank you. And LEP.
Yes.
I don't know what I was going to say about it, except we'd be working on it at WDIC as well.
Yeah, and you probably saw the plan.
Yeah.
We just didn't have the plan. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So that's why we really didn't feel comfortable passing the resolution until we could see the plan itself.
Okay.
But there was the plan was definitely there and done. I mean, not, but we just didn't have it.
You didn't have it. Okay. Thank you.
Peter.
Yeah. It's probably more efficient if I address the question to Joe. But I don't know in how long ago it was, a year ago maybe 2 years, when I was involved with this, when the living wage thing first came up and we had this committee that made a report. And I remember that the cost of 100% overcoming the living wage deficiency was a lot of money. It was in the millions that we were talking. And then I heard Nathan say, well, now people are 90% compliant. And so I wondered how those two numbers fit together. Were they mostly compliant before, or is the $1 million all in the last one company?
That's right, Peter. Actually, it would that remaining group of individuals would cost about $2 million to move up. So yes, so most of the folks were already at the living wage. That's right.
Okay. Well, it's nice to hear that without being pushed, our people, the people that do our contracting for them do that. Because that's not true every place in the country at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Julie?
Yes. Subsequent to the meeting you were talking about, Joe followed up on my request to know what happened on the two projects.
Oh, yes.
For which there were apprentice programs.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, did those apprentices stay with the projects? Did they complete their training? And did they then stay in our county so that the purpose of having that apprenticeship training was met? And I got an answer from one with respect to the Brown Road project, the health department. The job foreman replied with the names and addresses of the apprentices that were on the project and said they're still residing where they were and they're still employed by the plumbers and steam fitters local. Mm-hmm. So on Brown Road, one of the locals, it worked.
Yeah.
And I hope we get the rest of the information.
I think there's a couple of letters. We have a special email box set up for this stuff. And I talked to Mike Talarski the other day, and he indicates there are at least a couple of letters that are responding to those questions. So I'll get those. As soon as I pull them out of that box, I'll get those in circulation. Yeah,
great. Well, I forgot. There was one other bit of action that happened at the committee meeting. You'll recall there was a gentleman that spoke at the legislature maybe two or three meetings ago who was asking the legislature to waive the fees related to his late tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan explored that issue in a little more detail and talked about and proposed a kind of process that we could follow to see whether or not we want to take legislative action at the county legislature level. And what's really key about that is that the law only allows us to do it if we could say that there is I forgot the exact words of it, but basically it has to be to the benefit of the county to make this change, but not to the benefit of the individual. And so, is that about right?
It's in the interest of the...
The interest of the county and not to the benefit of the individual. Is
it doesn't say that.
Well, it doesn't say that it... It needs to be in the interest of the county.
Right.
Most people bring forth that their detriment, but the law isn't their detriment. It has to be to the benefit of the
right.
county.
So what Jonathan has brought forth is a process for us to determine whether or not it is in the interest of the county. And the committee asked him to put it more in the format of a form. So that we could really clearly see step by steps and then talk about each of those points. Because, where it would go to first and who would vet it first needs some further discussion. So it was just the beginning of that discussion.
Thanks, Nathan. Carol?
Yeah, I'm just curious how broadly we're allowed to interpret that. Obviously we wouldn't want it. There'd be a flood of people late and, then coming to us for forgiveness of the late fee. But, if there's an individual who's going to end up in financial trouble, do we have any room for interpretation as to whether it's in our interest to keep them off the welfare rolls, for example?
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else for Nathan? Nathan, thank you for your report.
Well, yeah. I mean, Carol, it's not an easy process. I mean, it's going to require multiple steps of vetting in order to get to the point where it's legislature? I mean, is there a clear rubric or guideline or measurement system to know that? I don't think so. But it would definitely require discussion. I mean, somebody would have to spend a considerable amount of effort going through the appropriate channels in order to appeal their case.
And do our staff, if I ask the follow-up, do our staff already work with people with some administrative discretion as to
the finance department could talk about payment plans and all that other stuff, yeah. But in terms of waiving fees, they don't have that jurisdiction.
Okay, anything else? Rick, did you want to add anything?
No, I was just going to explain the installment agreements that we do with a multitude of people that come in and show good faith effort, and we bend over backwards, you know, to keep these homes out of foreclosure and work with them in a number of different ways. But this is always a last-ditch effort when you know, somebody's fallen off the rails, so to speak, and they're just claiming hardship in most cases. And from the case law that we've looked at so far, when counties have moved these things to be to the benefit of the county or in the county's best interest, it's usually something that's much larger than just a person's household or personal property. It usually means that there was storm damage there, like a FEMA-related occurrence or a Brownsfield incident where they had massive cleanup, and that for whatever reasons they found it to the best interest to the county, both in a financial way and for planning purposes, to remove penalties from somebody's property while trying to settle some of these issues that are a result of perhaps a hurricane or a storm. And we didn't find any cases where they were just, a person comes in and claims hardship, you know. So I think that's what most of the case law has been when counties have used this type of action to waive penalties.
Concludes my report.
Thank you. Carol, you're up next. Planning and Energy and Environmental Quality Committee. Carol Chalk is our chair.
We'll meet on November 19th at 12:30. Joe mentioned that we will be having the energized people. I just realized that this is a big deal. It will be a big deal thing if we put, if we do something different with what you can put on the tax rolls, essentially, or tax bill. So it will be a decision that we'll have to make. I'll work with you, Joe. We should maybe think about whether to have them first versus last, if, in fact, we have a long agenda and we don't these days know exactly how long privilege of the floor for the public goes at those meetings. We might want to think about having them first. So watch the agenda there, and members of the committee should just know that we have quite a few items shaping up, so this may be a longer meeting than usual. One of the items that we'll either have to take up then or early in December will be this year's appointment to the TCAT board. This does go through the planning committee and then to the legislature in December in order to meet the TCAT schedule. And our current representatives are, Kathy, Peter are in ongoing terms, and Frank Proto is the term that's up for for appointment. So if people are interested in that, please let me know right away.
Any questions for Carol? I wanted to mention a couple of events this weekend that folks should be aware of before we move on. One is on Sunday at 2 o'clock p.m. in Ithaca will be the annual Veterans Day Parade. And we provide money for flags and other things for the Veterans celebration or commemoration, probably is a better word. It's a very nice parade with a lot of units, veterans and fire departments and bands and other things. So it's generally on State Street and Cayuga Street. I expect that's where it'll be again. But that's an important one. It'll be nice to see some of us out there. Also, from the Civil War Commission, one of the commissioners, Simon St. Laurent, is giving a talk on the War of 1812 and how it affected New York State particularly and our local county population. And it mentions Governor Tompkins, among others, who was governor at the time. And along with the Civil War being a commemoration, the War of 1812 is simultaneous with this. And that's going to be at the History Center from 3 to 5. Could we take the minutes of the previous meeting? October 21st, someone want to move them? Moved by Leslin, seconded by Peter. Discussion? Dooley?
On packet page 32, which is page 2 of the minutes, the second paragraph from the bottom says, Ms. Kiefer stated for the record the following, but it is a little different than what I think I said. I'd like to read you what I have. She understands the county attorney to have said that this action needs to be done when the finance director certifies the budget is below the cap. However, the finance director cannot do that certification until the legislature votes on the budget. She therefore believes that the legislature should not be voting to have a public hearing until it is closer to the time that certification happens, and therefore this action is premature. I think that's a clearer statement, and I ask that it be adjusted.
Anyone have any objection to that adjustment?
No.
Okay, that'll happen. Are you ready to vote? All those in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand.
I'm going to vote for them.
Those opposed?
Yes.
That's unanimous.
That's in honor of Brian's leaving.
Is that like a parting gift or something?
Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
Any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn? By Peter. Seconded by Brian. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? We're adjourned.